Welcome to Partnership Plus, your go-to source for modern partnership wisdom with your host, Phil Hayes St. Clair.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have Phil HSC, or Phil Hayes St. Clair, as you like to be called. Guys, I think this is going to be a really great conversation around partnerships. Phil is somebody who has, you know, who we've worked together quite a bit, actually, and, you know, someone that I've seen actually just do this masterfully well. And so we were having a conversation off camera about, hey, why don't we get together and see if we can, you know, have a conversation around this, do a podcast around it, and just drop some value for people, because this is something that, you know, even with my clients that we talk about often, daily, you know, partnerships in business, in life, and how to maximize those. So I'm super excited to have this conversation with you today, because I think you're just going to drop some absolute gems. And if anything like we've actually spoken about off camera is like what it is here today, it's actually going to be pretty good. So hopefully we can live awesome. up to that. So give us a bit of a rundown, Phil, on your story, how you sort of got into partnerships, just some of the businesses that you've been involved in and what you're involved in now, because for those who are just meeting you for the first time, you do a lot. So just give us the quick rundown.
Yeah, sure. So Andy, you know, we share a similar starting point in our careers of joining the military, and I did that straight out of school. And I wanted to be a pilot, and sadly that dream was cut short as a consequence of an eye problem that they found that I had. So exited the military after about 6 years, and what I found really difficult through that transition was trying to work out where I fitted as a consequence of having just that lifelong ambition and no plan B around, you know, not being a professional soldier. So for me, then it was, 4 or 5 years of just working out which way was up. And where I found myself essentially was really enjoying the idea of building out businesses and creating a culture and momentum towards a particular outcome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that has taken me through 7 companies where I've had a chance to build things from everything from at-home healthcare and biotechnology and into e-commerce, right through to consulting businesses, and have had the fortune to be able to invest in companies in aerospace as well through that process. So I've just had a really, fantastic ride. You know, in retrospect, I can say that, you know, while you're in the trenches trying to do it, you know, it's pretty tricky sometimes, but being able to build out those businesses has been fantastic. And, you know, as we were working together, where I was seeking some help to try and work out how to, you know, make sense of all the ambition I've got, trying to make sure the right amount of time there was to dedicate to all the things that are really important. You know, you really helped me work out that, you know, ultimately there were 3 parts to my identity. And, you know, for those who were just meeting for the first time, I've got two girls, 2 daughters, and I'm married to a powerhouse woman who I'm actually, frankly, pretty surprised she said yes. The whole thing for me, as I started to realize, you know, the value I can bring to their lives, was to be a girl dad. And that was the first part of the identity that we'd sort of worked out. It was really about, you know, I am a feminist. I do believe in equality. I believe in trying to find the right opportunities for women and girls to really thrive, because the world, frankly, is just a much better place when we can have really outstanding minds come to bear on really difficult problems. And for a long, long time, women just did not have the opportunity to play that role alongside their male colleagues. So that's a big thing for me. Obviously, I'm a serial entrepreneur, and it took me a while to feel good about that sort of label and that title. But the reality is I'm a company builder. I love doing it. I'm good at it, I think. And I really enjoy teaching people how to do that, which brings me to the last part of my identity, which is around being an educator and doing online education, but also stepping into the classroom as an adjunct professor at the University of New South Wales to teach entrepreneurship to MBA candidates. And so that's kind of the story in a bit of a nutshell. Yeah. And, you know, for me, when I was thinking about what came next after finishing with Dropbuyer Health recently, you know, as we talked about, it was about, you know, what is the thing that really lights my head on fire? What is the thing that, you know, yes, it can be company building, but when you narrow it down to the thing that you really enjoy doing, for me, it was enterprise partnerships, which is another way of saying how do 2 businesses work out how they can partner together, and building just a philosophy, which I think is played out every single time in retrospect over all of these companies, which is you can't do it all yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you get to a point of going, all right, well, if I believe that's true, who are the companies who might on first blush appear to be competitors? You know, how do you forge a path towards them and have a conversation, say, well, what would happen? What would be the amazing outcome if we ended up working together to get to a place where independently we probably couldn't do that? So I dedicate a fair bit of my time now to do that.
I love that. And one of the things that's obviously clear from that is that you just do a lot. And, you know, this is probably the reason why we're having this conversation through partnerships, because, you know, once you start to evolve, you realize that oftentimes we are the bottleneck, you know, stopping the growth. You know, we have to actually reach out to people and ask, you know, who can I get to help me rather than how am I going to do this myself? And, you know, one of the other things that I think has been remarkable about you is that, you know, there was a time when you thought that you had reached, you know, some kind of limit of your potential. But then, you know, through partnerships, you've been able to progress to many, many, many levels above. So tell us a little bit about that ascension from the, you know, when you sort of got into business and you started realizing the power of partnerships. Tell us a little bit about that ascension into partnerships, because I want to get into some of the nitty gritty about, you know, these enterprise partnerships and how they work and things like that. So that, because I think that'll be huge value. But I just want to know exactly what was going through your mind when you first thought, wow, okay, it's just me and I'm doing so much and I'm like totally burnt out right now and I'm just managing all of these things and all of these people, but I have this opportunity to grow. What went through your mind to capitalize on that opportunity of leverage of partnerships?
I think the main thing, and you mentioned this before, where you can get stuck by your own limitation, when you realize that the world is full of people that want to progress certain things in a direction, right? So if it's in healthcare, there's a bunch of really clever people all trying to move the needle on that. If it's in biotech, the same thing. If it's in e-commerce, it actually doesn't matter what the field is. There is often a bunch of people thinking about the problem you're trying to solve maybe a little bit differently and might actually have very different capabilities to the ones you've got. And I guess there was just a switch that was flicked when I realized that, you know, if you want to be, for example, build a company which is very highly defensible from a business model point of view, then often what that, well, at least in my mind, it's how do I create all the functions? So how do I vertically integrate to protect all of that, right? And you sort of go, well, what if I don't need to do all of those things? Like, what if I stick to the thing that I'm really, really good at and then go and find the other companies, other people, other personalities who can come together? And if you can make it worth their while to pay attention to what you're doing and you can plug into them, which is really the essence of, you know, these kind of partnerships, if you can find out how to do that and you realize that there's actually this massive ecosystem, you're all pushing in the same direction, and at a human level, that's a good thing. So once I realized that, it was, well, actually the world's my oyster on this, because now all I need to do is think about who has been thinking about this problem for a long time and realize that they can't do everything themselves as well. Let's go and have an informal, non-competitive conversation and go, so listen, I haven't got all the resources I need to pull this off, and I'm going to assume you don't either. You do this really well, at least I perceive that. I do this really well. Is there an overlap? Right, which means, can we work together? And for the most part, if you're dealing with really good operators, they'll go, you know what? No, we can't do it all by ourselves. We can maybe think about doing this together. And then it starts a set of cascading conversations where it becomes, oh, this just got really exciting, because now instead of trying to work out how to build something I know nothing about, I can actually start investing in more in the stuff we're really good at and become the best in the world at that, and then plug into that other organization or organizations. And that to me is just massively powerful.
The thing I really loved that you said there was, who has been thinking about this problem for a while? Now, I think that is a really great thing in honing your mind to find those opportunities. Now, a lot of people, what would you say to people who are maybe first starting out on their journey and they're thinking, well, maybe I want to go it alone for that first little bit, and then once I get to that point where I think that I need help, then I'll reach out and try to find a partner, because I don't really know where to find these people. I don't really know where to find an A-plus partner who's going to pick up from, you know, from my, who has strengths to my weaknesses and things like that. So what would you say to those people is a great strategy going into a business? Do you think that there's kind of like one size fits all? Do you think it's, you know, very individual? Or what would you, what do you think is the best way from what you've seen in that, you know, in those journeys of entrepreneurs trying to really kind of push past that, you know, just break out into that next level of success?
So, you know, when we started this idea of partnerships, one of the level setting, I guess, strategies was, do people actually know what partnership, doing a partnership means? And we all think about partnership. You hear that word, it's quite a romantic notion, right? You have partnerships, you have a partner, you have a romantic partner. You might have had partners in the past which worked out really well. But when it comes to business, what you're trying to do here is actually work out, can we work with someone who can do something very complementary to what we do and add value to them in the process? And so we built a free online course which sort of level sets all of that, because the major thing and the place where partnerships fail 90% of the time is when an organization gets into bed with another organization without actually working out what the shared language is between those two businesses. So let's go back to a really fundamental place where everyone can understand: dating, right? When you go and meet someone for the first time, the real mission there is to work out if there's an instinct of whether you really like that person or not. Can you communicate? Are you on the same page? Do you have shared interests? What are the things that really light me up about that other person beyond what you can see in a photo or an image? And the same is true in business partnerships. The whole idea here is to work out shared language so that if you define, for example, you know, Andy, you'll define success or growth in a particular way. I might be in the ballpark of understanding that when I hear you say that word, but I'm sure you have a set of metrics that really strongly define what growth and success means in your context, and they're guaranteed to be different to the way I define growth and success, even though those two words, we share them. So one of the best things you can do in any kind of partnership is to fight for that shared communication, that shared knowledge, where you can say, and I'll give you an example of this that happened at Drop By Health. You know, we are experts in at-home blood testing. We had a really strong sense of how inflammation and chronic inflammation plays a role in the way that health evolves over time and as you age. And we had this hunch that it also played a really significant role in IVF for people who are trying to have children that way. And when we approached Virtus Health, who we have a partnership with, and it's just an amazing partnership, we needed to understand what success looked like for them. And what they define success as is improving the success rate of IVF. In other words, the number of people that go into treatment and actually have children as a consequence. And that's a really straightforward sort of thing. Everyone goes, yes, we're going to galvanize around that one, you know, that one mission. But of course, there are a set of increments inside success to get you to a child being born. And a lot has to go right for that to be the case. So what we did with them was to really dive into, so what are the processes? What are the different approaches? And what part of that sort of pathway can we play a role in the success of? And this is so far before we got to any kind of deal, right? This was just scoping out how do you define success? And in some cases, it was, how do we get to a to 12 weeks, right? What is known as what we all sort of think is safe pregnancy. But there is a step before that called clinical pregnancy, which is far sooner than that. And that's about, you know, has the embryo been able to take inside the woman so that it can start that process? And that's a massive milestone in itself. So then you work back from that, then there are other steps. And what we found was the ability for us to understand that not only gave us a sense about what the problem was that needed to be solved, we then worked out exactly where we can play a role and where our expertise can play a really significant upside, hopefully, to that process. And that took four or five conversations. That wasn't sort of a come in, do a date, so how can we help? It was diving in with other people in the room, learning more, and ultimately it built such a level of trust that when we started to go into the nuts and bolts of defining that language, putting that language into a partnership agreement, so much goodness came from that, because we were so on the same page that if we weren't in the room during an internal conversation, it actually didn't matter. because they were able to take our intent into their conversations, and then it sort of proceeded, our reputation literally preceded us. And the same thing happened in reverse. Now, that's a multi-year partnership trying to do something where the outcome, frankly, is unknown, right? We're doing scientific and clinical research there where we hope we're going to find the right set of things, but we might actually find things that were very, very different. And so when we talk about finding shared language, it's about trying to create a risk mitigation, because often we won't know how partnerships will play out. If they play out well according to the numbers and the metrics, that's fantastic. But usually what happens in a successful partnership is the primary objective is achieved, and then because people enjoy working with each other so much, they end up building out other opportunities to work together, and the partnership goes from a one thing to a multi-thing, which people can then grow even bigger as a consequence of. So there's huge upside to doing this well, but it's just about having a starting point and saying, what's that shared language that I have to fight to get to? An old commanding officer of mine, I remember coming down when I was, you know, brand new to a unit. We're in a signals platoon, and all he said to us, he screamed it at us, "You have one job, and that is to fight for comms." And I'll just never, ever forget that, because in this context, it's all about how do you get that shared language. So that's how we think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And, you know, and just to kind of summarize that, because I think that was super important, you know, looking at, obviously, when you get into those partnerships, it's about understanding what is the risks, but also what is the opportunity that we're chasing? What's the size of that opportunity? And do we accept both of those as a partnership going forward? And if we do, then now let's talk about that shared language, the language that we're going to use, you know, going forward, you know, in this partnership, the key metrics that we're going to use to define success, because it's about asking also that question, how are we actually defining success of this partnership or of this endeavor or whatever it is? And, you know, and then building that trust by doing exactly what you said that you were going to do. So obviously filling your end of the bargain. Now, I love those things. And also, We had a conversation just before we sort of, you know, jumped on camera here about, you know, expectations in partnerships. And, you know, we were talking about how, you know, one of the biggest killers of a great partnership and of, you know, achieving a mission that could have been so amazing and so good for humanity is unmet expectations and, you know, lack of communication in partnerships. What I want to talk about is when we've got a great partnership like that and we've got that language and we've got those things, how do we drive that partnership? So we've got hold of it, we've got the trust, and we've got everything. How do we drive it towards success without breaking it? Because I think that's a problem that a lot of, you know, super-driven entrepreneurs are facing.
Yeah, well, I think we have to accept that in most cases, partnerships take longer than they expect, than we all expect to pay off. And when you move into that space, like you can say, look, we're going to do this for a year, 6 months, 2 years, 4 years, whatever the case is, there will be other factors that come into play that you didn't expect. And I guess the real answer to this question is, how do you maintain trust over time, right? Which is consistency over time equals trust. How do you do that so that if things are going to wobble, if things are going to take longer, if things are happening quicker than expected, how is it that you keep hold of that? And what we say is that the best tempo to maintain communications is a fortnightly catch-up that is a religious routine and ritual as part of that partnership. It doesn't need to be every week. It certainly doesn't need to be, you know, more than once a week. And it shouldn't be in every month or every quarter, because so much can happen in those times. It can be a 20-minute check-in to check in against progress, against the milestones you agreed, to understand, is there anything bubbling up from the surface? Is there something out left or out right which is going to cause us grief shortly? And that continuous sort of interface, which, by the way, cannot be done by email, cannot be done by chat. It's got to be at the very minimum in a phone call context or in a video call like this. This is just about maintaining that language, because you don't want to deliver any surprise to a partner, right? The thing that will shatter all of the progress, all the momentum in a partnership will be a surprise. So this is one of those ways that even if you don't have a lot to talk about, you can check in, you can say, hey, listen, Andy, there's not a lot of an update from our side. Everything we think is going pretty well. Are you seeing anything from your side that might be causing you any kind of concern, or are things moving faster than you thought? What are you seeing? That can be a 5-minute conversation. It's a check-in. But those check-ins allow, over time, the team to go, no, we're thinking about things on the same page. If you were to meet every quarter, every month, like I said, so much can happen that it might be, oh, I forgot to tell you about this thing that happened in the first week of the month and we only catch up monthly. Like, that's ridiculous, right? Yeah, so yeah. There is not rocket surgery that needs to go on here to try and make this a reality. But for leaders, we have to invest the time to make that space in our diary so that we can make that work. And if you end up pushing this off onto other team members, that's all fine too. But somehow then you've got to make sure that they're feeding back to you every bit of detail that's relevant so you don't feel blindsided if for whatever reason you've delegated that and they report to you every month or every quarter. And then you see this and just go, what the hell is this? Like we never, this shouldn't have happened. So you just got to be mindful, particularly in those really important partnerships. For leaders, even if they're busy entrepreneurs, make the time to be there in that room and you won't ever regret that.
Yeah, I love that. And so I think the big key takeaway there was, as the leader, you need to maintain the cadence of that mission, of that partnership.
Right.
And, you know, keep things moving along. But also I totally agree with you where people get afraid of upsetting people, or, you know, they say, oh, well, if I called Phil, he's going to get really angry at me. He's going to get angry at you if you don't call him, and then it goes a month and then he finds out that it's gotten worse. Yep. So, you know, I think that's a big part of leadership, right? Is having that courage, having that skill to be able to communicate well with people and, you know, getting out of your own way and saying, hey, this isn't about me. This is about the team. This is about our clients, our customers, the mission, whatever the thing is that you're doing. And just pushing that ego to the side and saying, hey, I've made a mistake or whatever, because that's going to be the best thing, because you are definitely going to make mistakes, right? This is something that you know, see all the time. Yep. So let's just say you've got, you know, someone wants to work with you in terms of partnerships. We know that you've got the course. I want to talk about that a little bit more in a second. But let's just say someone says, okay, I want to be really good at partnerships. I want to kind of do what, you know, Phil can do. I want to progress and be able to do multiple things at one time, but have these higher level network and relationships with people because they're ready to expand. What would you say like the top five things are that people need to do to kind of shape up in terms of partnerships to really hone that skill so that they can attract some, you know, really top tier people to do great things with?
The way that I work with people is to try and build them into partnership focused leaders. Because I want them to do this, right? I've seen just too much evidence that good things can come from structuring and dealing with partnerships well. We deliver it through keynote speaking, through fireside chats, through virtual trainings, or by doing more intense corporate engagement, which is about doing the diagnostics for how existing partnership portfolios are actually functioning. So when we think about the five tactics to doing partnerships well, step number one is to work out and make sure that you're really clear on the value that you can provide to any other partner. A lot of people walk into a conversation and think, well, here's my pitch and this is what we do. But often they've done it in such a single dimensional way that people who are on the partnership side of that conversation just go, yeah, that kind of sounds interesting, but I actually don't have a sense about how we would plug in or take advantage of that sort of method or the thing you've created or the business you've built. So step number one is to express the way that you do your value really, really well, knowing that you might be selling to one group as your particular customer, but if you're trying to partner with an organization, the way that you would express that value might be very different, because you might be an ingredient brand to another business when compared to selling directly to another business. So there's a nuance there. The second one is around shared language, like we talked about, and there are free frameworks inside that course to help people sort of break that apart and get really good at not only expressing the value they've got, but putting it in a format that you can share on paper or in PowerPoint with your potential partner, so that by the time you've had those four or five conversations, before you've even signed a deal, you've got such great intention on the page that they can feel proud and can take the risk of taking that shared document into their organization and champion you on the way into that organization. Mm-hmm. So that's the next step, which is a really material one. Then closing the deal. You know, we take a lot of that language, we ultimately put in the hands of the lawyers who are involved in drafting the agreement that's going to make sense.
Yep.
But as we say, it's so important to have that language set first, because if you don't and lawyers come in too early, then not only is it really expensive, but there's a great chance that you're going to have different things put in that agreement that you actually didn't want to have put in there in the first place. Step number four is about how do you fast track to that first win, right? Now, let's just play this out in a bit of a role play. You know, Andy, you've got a large organization. I've come to pitch to you. We've said, yes, that's going to work out well. The vision looks great. The potential's fantastic. And that's all fine. But you've taken a risk in introducing me to your organization, and now you're on the hook. Mm-hmm. So my job as the partner coming in, as part of this shared language and this deal doing, is to say, I know how within the first 30, 60, 90 days, I'm going to make you look like a rock star. We have worked out the first milestone that you can be proud of, will be proud of, that gives credibility and frankly, actually deals with the doubters that sort of said, actually, this is not going to work. We've put such effort into that first win that it takes a bit of pressure off you. You get some credibility, and now we can build out more momentum into that partnership. That's step number four. And step number five is how to become just a great partner. And this is where we go into the really human aspect of being a great partner. This is things like, you know, Andy, we're doing this partnership together, but the reality is that you might have some other problems. Can I help you with that? Do you need a sounding board? You're hiring. Can I expose the role that you're hiring for to my network to try and accelerate the time it takes for you to close the deal on new hires? Mm-hmm. There are all these little tips and tactics that we go into in some detail, which don't need to be done all the time, but they add such unique value because you cared enough to do that step. And the reason it's relevant is because no one else does it. So you might have 10 partnerships, and I'm the guy who's come in and done those little bit of one percenters, and those one percenters just gone, man, this guy Phil just keeps on coming along and helping me with these little things outside of what we're currently doing. Why am I doing that? I'm doing it to build more and more trust with you so that if we go into the inevitable rocky road of a partnership where things don't go according to, we have a shared base of relationship where we can go, all right, so Andy, look, this is not working out like we expected. How do we solve this? And you just go, hey, listen, let's just get in a room and, you know, just work it out. That's a whole lot better than me coming in as a, you know, hard and fast sales guy, doing a deal, then taking off. You don't hear from me for ages. And then when something goes wrong, you've got 10 other partners who you're looking at. If I've been that hard and fast sales guy, or I've just sold you a widget and it hasn't worked out well, who's the first person you're going to cut from that set of partnerships?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? 100%. So it's all of those bits. And this is a muscle, right? So, you know, we enjoy working out. We know the value of being strong, having strong chassis and trying to look after ourselves. Doing partnerships, it's building a muscle over time. And this process is what we do every single time. It's just the context and the industry and the potential complexity that has to be worked out. But if you follow that framework, the framework works, and it's been working for me and for many of my colleagues for 20 years.
Yeah, incredible. I just want to summarize those really quickly. Like the first thing that you sort of said before we sort of got into those five things, because you kind of knocked that out of the park, was just being a partnership focused leader. And I think that this is where people look at leadership and they just think it's like this one big, you know, blanket umbrella term. And that's how a lot of people look at it. But there's many, many different kinds of leaders. And as people are stepping into that leadership style, they have to go through this sometimes painful, but oftentimes enjoyable self-discovery process about what kind of leader that they actually are. And that can then also shape a lot of the partnerships. And they oftentimes, you know, do it backwards where they learn about what kind of leader through having a bad partnership. And so, you know, the first thing that you said there was uncovering value. Number two, shared language. Number three, closing the deal, you know, and that there was some really, really great points in there about, you know, getting a lot of that legwork done first before you jump in and spend all the money on the lawyers, you know, who they don't need it, guys, you know, do a lot of the other stuff first, and then you can, you know, get that down pat, and then fast track that first win, which I love. You know, that's always going to build confidence in the team, and it's going to, you know, really set the direction of how things are going. And obviously, you know, momentum, forward momentum will solve a lot of the problems that we have. And then that last thing was just become a great partner. And I think that, you know, some of the things you sort of said there was about almost being the conduit between your networks. So being the trusted advisor with the thing that you want to be an expert at. So, you know, if I want to talk about partnerships, I know that you're the guy to talk to. And that's why we're doing this today, because, you know, I actually was like, I think that we should do a podcast on this so that people can get some value from you, and that, you know, because this is a super, super valuable skill. And a lot of people struggle with this. They think it's just going to be easy, but partnership, you know, navigating partnerships is oftentimes incredibly difficult. And I don't think people realize how difficult it can be, especially when it goes bad. It's better to just do this stuff right the first time, build the skill, and just, you know, knock it out of the park. I've had a, you know, one of my business partners that I've been, you know, done pretty much everything that I've done with the whole time. He's just awesome. We work so well together, and we've applied many, many of these things. And we kind of got lucky in a lot of ways because we, you know, complemented each other. But for some people, they just don't get lucky, and they do get a bad, you know, bad egg, and they have to learn things the hard way. But I think there, just that big lesson is just becoming the trusted advisor and adding status to the people that you want to do deals with. You know, don't, you know, when you come in, add value to people, and that's going to increase your status, and it's also going to make them look good too. And that's really at the end of the day what people care about, especially in the corporate space. They, you know, they want to look good by introducing you into the circles. So yeah, absolutely love that and love those points. Tell us a little bit about your course and what people could expect if they were to work with you. And, you know, what is involved in the course, and what your ultimate aim is with that, with the people that you work with.
Yeah, so the course itself is a free email-based course. So when you sign up on my website, you get 6 emails, one a day, which has a tactic per day. So it's very, you can do it whenever you like. All the resources are linked through there, so you can get access to them anytime you like. It's really just my way of saying to anybody who's interested in this idea of being a partnership-driven leader, or somebody who likes to work inside an ecosystem and knows there's an ecosystem that can be, you know, better operated. For me, it's all about how do we help people understand some of the tenets. And the ambition with that course is just level up, right? Get to a point where you can feel comfortable about that piece. When it comes to working together, you know, I have the fortune of sort of having people come to me and say, look, I run an aerospace business, and we have these very complicated government relationships that we're trying to work out. How do we do this better? Like, how do we just partner better? And we have a chance to spend weeks together trying to work out the nuance of that. Where are the roadblocks? What does this look like over a 10-year period? Not over the next 6 months, but let's just zoom out and look at this very differently. But then I also have people coming to me and saying, listen, I've got this team of 12 people, and we are a sales team, or we're a business development team, we're a function that is inside this bigger company. Can we spend a day together working out some tactics, because it's just not working the way that I thought it would work? So we go and spend a day together working out what they do, diagnosing some of the shortcomings, giving just a bit of experience and encouragement that actually the grind can be tough if you're doing that kind of role. But here are the ways that you can fill the funnel up, make it a little bit larger at the top, and to build systems to make it easier for you to do your job. But, you know, being really, really clear that signing and closing the deal is actually where the work begins. You might feel that you put a lot of effort into trying to get the deal across the line, but let me tell you, as soon as that deal is signed, that's where the real grind starts. And the grind, you know, I say that lovingly, right? The idea of actually fostering a relationship and doing the work, the true value that you're going to build beyond the financial value that spins off the back of it, is that by the time you've finished in that role, you will go to whatever the next company is, or you'll start the next one, or whatever the case is. You have the opportunity to then reach back out to that person who you sold to, that you built a business with, to then create whatever comes next. And you know what the dirty little secret here is? The best partnerships happen as a result of working with someone in the past. Right? Because you've got that existing trust. You've got that sort of way of doing doing business with each other. So there's a lot to look forward to, not just in the immediacy of creating value in your current context, but whatever comes next, whatever your next play is, you can rest assured if you do it well here, the value that you're going to bring is actually 10x, because you've built such a reputation that those people want to work with you again in whatever context that is. So I think there's just so much exciting future value for people to look at this. And, you know, it's happening today. You think about the people that you would reach out to from your history and go, hey, listen, John, can we catch up? Oh, Andy, great to hear from you. Yeah, what are you up to? That trust, like you, the building of trust has already happened, right? Now you can rekindle and you can say, hey, listen, I'd like to sort of share with you, tactic one, the value that we have here. I want to check and see if there's an overlap here somewhere. Then you just move through the other five tactics. And then hopefully you've built out these great planks. A great example of this, Andy, is if you look at Gore-Tex, right? So we all know Gore-Tex as being that fabulous, waterproof, highly durable material. Their business is all about partnerships because they're an ingredient brand. They don't make a Gore-Tex thing. Other people make the thing. They just ship them the Gore-Tex in a particular format that they can that can then get modified and introduced into a product line. And their entire business is about making their partners successful. Without their partners, they don't have a business. They just got an interesting material. Yep. You might find right now, if you're listening to this, that you have a particular product in the market. If we were to ever meet, one of my first questions to you would be, how do we turn you into an ingredient as opposed to a standalone selling product? Because if we find a way to make you an ingredient, not only does your cost to serve go down, but your capacity to sell and grow increases substantially because you're not doing direct selling, right? You're part of other people's machinery. And that makes you even more, it often makes business models more resilient because now those other companies can't deal without you.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's a really interesting way of thinking about this. That's what gets me up in the morning. And the conversations I get to have are mind-blowing because all these different industries work obviously differently. And there are so many organizations that have just gone, we've tried to go it alone for a really long time. We have big problems to solve. The world is staring down the barrel of a bunch of really complicated problems, particularly now. How are we going to do this? And I think in most cases, partnership, whether it be with government, with other companies, with customers, with B2B, B2C, all these different ways, partnership is often the answer to paving a much smoother way to getting the outcomes that all those parties need. And this is not about surrendering value. There's so much more value that can be created for everyone involved that it doesn't, like, that's not the game. Yep. If you partner well, great value, you know, true value, revenue, profit, that comes as a consequence of working out how you play well together, because ultimately you'll reduce the cost that you've got to invest. You get to make more money and the people who are working with you get to do the same. And ultimately, you might find your company in a situation where that other partner goes, actually, this has been great. We'd like to acquire you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yep. This is
an ideal scenario.
Exactly. And it doesn't always work out that way, but it's certainly a really fantastic way to think about the future of growth.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, one of the things I really love what you said there, just to kind of wrap it up, was you sort of said the 10X thing there. And I think that a lot of people think a little bit too small, and that's a projection of just thinking about ourselves. Yep. And so when we get out of that piece and we expand a little bit more, you know, we always say, you know, we talk about this a lot, leverage is the fastest way to become successful. So if you want to go far, you know, leverage off these partnerships and leverage off that you know, those contacts, and you can achieve so much more. That is that 10X thinking. And sometimes that is actually easier than thinking, what's that one tiny little next step? Like, where do I go from here? Because that actually will create, if you achieve that, you have created a micro result and you're not really helping anyone. But when you actually think bigger, you actually create these 10X leaps, and you find that they're actually easier than what you imagined that they ever would be. I think the hard part comes in when people, like you said, once it gets signed, then the work starts. It's like, okay, then you're actually in the doing and you have to do a lot because you've bitten off quite a bit. And so then that's when you start to learn how to manage yourself and your energy and things like that. But I really enjoyed this conversation because I think this, you know, partnerships, I get this sense from you that what you want people to think about is think on a higher level, play a bigger game, you know, think a bigger strategy. And to do that, to actually execute on that, you need people, you need great partnerships. So to be successful in that level of thinking, you need to work on this like a skill set, right? Like, is that your message?
That is the message. And I can help you set up the way in which you do this, build this muscle. I can help you see that it's actually not that complicated. It is a discipline. And it's something that a lot of people can pick up and just go, no, I get that. Actually, most people look at that process and go, here are the places we do really well at, and here are the parts that we do really poorly at. And ironically, turning around poor to good is not a big switch to flick, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. when you look at all of this, it's about how do we help people grow first and foremost, and that growth comes from unexpected places, and usually those unexpected places, the bridge to build between those places is a partnership.
Love it. Okay, so let's wrap this one up. So for the people who are obviously watching this going, that's the best thing that I've ever heard, and I want to get out there and find some people, get amongst it. I want to learn a little bit more about Phil HSC.
Yep.
Where do they find you? What's the best place to drop you a message?
Yeah, look, best place is to go to the website philhsc.com. You'll find entry to that course straight away. And what we do off the back of that course is that every week we have a newsletter called Partnership Wednesday, and that goes out with three ideas from me to help you think about the partnerships you never thought were possible, and one question for you to ponder through that process. So the idea here is that consider me your gentle encouragement to continue going through the processes to build that muscle around partnerships. And if you'd like to go deeper into that, the engagement models that we have there on the website too, and you look at the tab on the website that says partner with me, and you can see the kind of options that we have there. But Andy, I will say just in closing out, you know, everything we talk about here is important to business, but the same methodology and the same approach is just as important at home. So whoever your significant other is, however you think about your relationships, you are in a partnership with that other person, right? They're going to see more of you than anyone else is usually going to see, good and bad. And what we find, even though we don't do any work specifically in interpersonal relationships at home, between partners, but if you think about this as a mental model of partnership over the long term, and you want a long-term partnership with the person that you live with or the person you're growing old with, these kind of principles, they are just as applicable there as well. Usually a strong partnership in business is a result of a strong partnership at home. So however that can be adapted, that sort of methodology, I mean, feel free to use that there as well. I think it's super important.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And that is a big thing too, because how many partnerships have been ruined by not necessarily the two people that are actually working together, but people who are unhappy, outside of those partnerships, or a turbulent relationship that's brought that down.
That's it.
So, it is a multifaceted approach in terms of the success that we have to bring to it. So we have to bring that package, to our home life as well, where we, it's not like, oh man, I'm home and now I can just relax and give my partner 20% of who I am.
That's
you
it.
Actually have to, to be that leader at home too, and, give your partner the best possible person. So I think, that's something that a lot of people who are listening to this might know who you are already. But for those who don't, I think that this is actually just one thing that you've done really, really, really well. And I think we sort of already mentioned this, but you always make that daily time in your routine for your family. And I think that that's something that a lot of people, it's like, oh, I don't have time. Make time, because you've got case studies like you who make time regardless of how busy you are, where I just love sending people your results and saying, hey, just take a look at this guy, make time. You're making excuses. So I think that's a great sort of, I think it's a great thing to finish on, because, that is probably the most important partnership that you'll undertake in your whole life, right?
Yeah, I agree. And look, the irony is that no one's going to remember how hard you worked apart from your kids and your partner.
And I know your kids know, definitely.
Oh, they know.
They tell you to work harder, don't they?
Most of the time.
Yeah. They're like, how come you're home every single morning, spending time with us? Shouldn't you be out working? No, that's great. Yeah. I think that's been a really, really valuable conversation, and I think you're doing some amazing things. Phil, thanks for the conversation around partnerships, around leadership, around, kicking ass, going to that next level. And for those, just to recap, philhsc.com, go and follow him on Instagram, send him a DM, just, some things that you enjoyed about today. Let's wrap it up there. Thanks, guys.
Awesome.
Be great. See you, Phil.
Thanks, Eddie.
Thanks for listening to the end of this episode of Partnership Plus. If you like what you heard, you can share this episode via text message. And if you'd like to build your business partnership muscle, my free weekly newsletter called Wednesday Partnership will help you do just that. You'll find a link in the show notes. Finally, I'm big on encouragement and love to see people be in motion towards their ambitions. So if you know someone who might be struggling, reach out to them with a quick message of encouragement. It could change their life. Thanks again, and I'll see you in the next episode.